What does God have against Eric Cantor? Here's a small bit of unsolicited counsel for David Bratt, who pulled off the most surprising primary election upset in recent history when he defeated the majority leader of the House of Representatives, the second most powerful Republican in Washington, D.C., this past week. Recent history provides a cautionary warning about candidates citing God as a divine politician summoning them to run for election and then assuring they will win their predestined position. During the 2011-2012 Republican presidential primaries, not a single one of the candidates who claimed a call from God to become the president of the United States won their party's nomination for the presidency. On the night of the election, Bratt, a Master of Divinity recipient from Princeton Theological Seminary, cited God as the cause of the miracle of his unexpected defeat of Eric Cantor. God working through people, Bratt said. How wonderful it would have been for Bratt to praise our democracy and talk about the power of a vote. But no, he had to place God's imprimatur on what happened in his congressional district. As political pundits spin their various theories of what happened in this primary election, I find myself musing over the question, what did God have against Eric Cantor? If Bratt was correct in his thinking, which I don't think was the case. Surely God wasn't upset over Cantor's support for immigration reform. Some polls indicated that 80% of the electorate in that congressional district of Virginia supported immigration reform. And theologically speaking, God identified welcoming the stranger as a hallmark of faith and love. And it wouldn't seem fair for God to punish Cantor for his support for pro-immigration reform in Virginia while rewarding Lindsey Graham for a similar position in South Carolina. Sadly, some hinted that Cantor's Jewish identity could have been a problem for the majority leader in the House of Representatives. God forbid. As far as I know, no anti-Semitic rhetoric or attitudes surfaced in either candidate's campaign. That phenomenon would classify as morally wrong and democratically evil. Let's just get rid of it right now. And on that note, I will end my hypothetical speculations. Here's the point about which I'm talking. Why can all of us not agree that what happened in Virginia had nothing to do with a sovereign imposition of theocratic politics, but simply was the consequence of voters who preferred Bratt over Cantor? That issue merits study, of course, but not the God talk themes. Is it not sufficient for us to trust the dynamics of our democracy? Why do some people have to attribute all political successes to God? I couple my unrequested counsel to candidate Bratt with a plea to all who are interested in the national congressional elections or any other election for that matter. Please don't use God as a political attribute, a tool for success, or the mascot for any political party. Our intermingling of personal faith and partisan politics is not helpful to anybody. My own hunch is that God would be pleased if no person or no political party tried to manipulate the divine for self-serving purposes. For all who believe in God and who want to talk about God's will, priorities, and actions, plenty of material cries out for attention. But it's not about partisan politics. It's about feeding hungry people, strengthening justice, caring for strangers, making peace, demonstrating love, and protecting freedom. Issues with a moral value established a long, long time ago. And just one more thing. You heard my conversation with the Reverend Allison Harrington, pastor of the Southside Presbyterian Church in Tucson, Arizona, as she spoke passionately about her congregation reviving a spirit of the 1980s sanctuary movement and welcoming one undocumented immigrant, Daniel, facing imminent deportation into their church building, Allison shared a memorable motto, "Better in trouble with the law than in trouble with the Lord." Well, it's likely that thus far, Southside Presbyterian has been able to avoid trouble with both. This week, Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials granted a stay of enforcement, allowing Daniel to remain with his wife and American-born son, as well as to work here. I'll pause for just a second so you can try to guess what happens next. That's right. Allison and her church are already working on figuring out who they'll be able to offer sanctuary next. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your generous support's essential in helping to make this show possible. Please visit stateofbelief.com and stay there while considering making a contribution, and don't get up until you do so. And do it today. We'll use the money wisely, I promise you that, to keep State of Belief on the air and to expand the reach of this program. Every week, we hear from listeners across the country who say they rely on our show for the kind of inclusive, respectful approach to interreligious dialogue that they can't find anywhere else. Stateofbelief.com is where you'll find out more about the show, hear extended interviews, watch in-studio videos, read transcripts, and sign up for our podcasts. You can stay in touch with us throughout the week on Facebook and Twitter. Our listener line is 202-681-4246. You're welcome to call it anytime. We encourage you to tell others about the show. We want them in the conversation. We'll all be helped by more people joining us in the conversation. Encourage them to listen so they'll be ready for the dialogue. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was. He was. Yes, he was.